This podcast is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky stuff. You know, any film that we talk about here, we recommend you see in advance. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive, it's alive.
Groovy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Oh, the Horror. It's a horror movie podcast from an expert and a newcomer's perspective. I'm the newcomer, Steve Allman.
And I'm the expert, Rob Holmes.
All right, and we've got quite a bit of an interesting one today. It's going to be Krampus.
Yeah.
The second film from, I think second directorial film from Michael Dougherty. Starring pretty much every comedic character actor you've ever known from network television. This is the age-old tale of the German demon known as Krampus that can basically kidnap naughty children if they forget the meaning of the holidays.
Well, not just children. Anyone who has forgotten
anyone,
the meaning
really.
Of the holidays.
An entire German village, maybe.
Maybe. Just maybe an entire German village told in really awesome looking stop motion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like a bit of an overview for the ones that like have already seen it, obviously, you know, but, a dysfunctional family basically, is forced to stay together for the holidays and embrace the season, but fail to, and as a punishment, the Krampus comes to visit and take them away in his evil way. It's a very simple-ish story, but a lot of cool nuance and a lot of interesting technical things from this very interesting director. Now, this director also directed a very good film that you liked a lot.
Oh, love it, man. Love it. Trick or Treat, man. Trick or
Treat. You love
Trick
or Treat.
Trick or Treat is one of my favorite anthology films of all time. The character of Sam, iconic, man. Like,
yeah.
Sam is up there with a Freddy, with a Jason, with a Pinhead. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, some people may disagree,
Yeah, well, I think if they need that, he probably would need to shine in his own sort of like series in order
sure.
to be like a true mascot horror icon. But
well,
absolutely, that design, that look.
I mean, Dougherty is working on Trick or Treat 2, finally,
yeah.
And it took a while. This, you know, Trick or Treat was a film that had to build up steam over time to finally get recognition, and that's why he was able to do a film like Krampus. Now, Krampus had to be toned down a bit to a PG-13 rating. Traditionally, as we know, R-rated Christmas horror does not sell well. It does not make a lot of money. Black Christmas, prime example of that. Silent Night, Deadly Night. They don't really do well, and they get a lot of negative feedback from parents and, you know, different organizations.
I'm very curious because and you're actually right, because almost all of the hard R-rated Christmas themed horror films
mm-hmm.
that I've seen would easily be put up in like a dollar bargain bin DVD section at a Walmart, and I don't like the original Jack Frost. Like, who cares about that? Nobody's seen that. Like, as Z-list of a horror movie that is, I can't honestly think of like hard R-rated Christmas horror films.
Oh no, there are. I mean, Black Christmas is a good one, a good example. I mean, we covered that before. It's the problem is they either get a lot of backlash from critics sometimes, or they'll get backlash from like PTA and different parent councils
right.
and stuff like that, because they feel like it's an attack on the holiday and they don't want kids to see like an evil version of Santa Claus or anything
which
like that.
Which is absurd.
But you know, I mean, people are very, that's how Silent Night, Deadly Night got pulled from theaters when it first came out in, I think, 1984, because
yeah.
it was too much. So within the first week or so of release, it ended up getting pulled. Hence, it got redone as Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. That's its own story, but it's a tough sell. And the remake of Black Christmas, I hated, but it still didn't do well in theaters, no matter, you know. So for them to sell this, it was a deal, I think, with Universal to say, okay, yeah, we'll make your movie if you do it PG-13. And Michael Dougherty said, sure, but I am pushing your PG-13 rating to the absolute limit.
And boy, does he. Oh my God. Like, credit to you for getting all of what you put in this movie into a PG-13 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so, like, again, I think we were saying before, like, I think that this movie is about maybe, like, 30%, like, plot and, like, story of as to why I love it. But I think the main part is, like, all of the, how technically amazing and, like, the things that are shown in this movie, it's on par with, like, it's on par with, like, Gremlins with, like, Jurassic Park levels of, like, thrills and excitement. It's amazing.
It's pretty awesome to see the technical stuff that he put into here. Now, Michael Dougherty is not a huge CG fan. He'll use it as a tool, but he doesn't make it his main focus. And you can tell there's a few times with, like, the gingerbread men, there's some CG moments with them, but it works for what they are.
Absolutely.
And all of the other characters, the elves that appear, that's all practical effects. They did a little CG with the Jack in the Box and, like, the angel and all that stuff. But for the most part, they are practical effects.
Magnificently designed creatures in this as well. The elves, the Krampus itself, Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
The
angel, the one that they had for the top of the
exactly.
It was the angel, I guess, for the top of the tree that turned into this, like, creepy Krampus monster. Yeah.
It was basically like Bride of Chucky levels of, like, puppetry.
Not
nearly as bad, but
not,
like,
not nearly as goofy. You know what it reminded me of? There's a film from 1992 from it's called Demonic Toys.
Uh-huh.
It was made by Full Moon Entertainment. They look very much like the toys from Demonic Toys, except
they have like the eyeshadow in there and stuff.
Yeah, except way creepier. Like, these definitely push the limits of some practical effect work and kind of what you can get away for PG-13, like seeing the face break apart and you see a creature underneath that's there.
Oh, absolutely. Super good, though.
And that's another thing about this is that, yes, they show a lot of stuff of these other creatures, but the elves, you never see what they look like underneath those masks. And Krampus, he's wearing the face of a Santa Claus. You never fully see what he looks like. You see his eyes, you see his tongue, and you see elements of him throughout, his hooves.
But he's essentially wearing a mask.
Oh, he is wearing a mask. And that's what's great about this film is that Dougherty he's taking the John Carpenter approach of things, especially for The Thing. It's showing part of it just enough to get it across, but not showing them everything to a T and leaving it
keeps you guessing.
Yeah, and plus when you show everything, you see all the seams, and that's why CG gets used on a lot of stuff because they want to show the full creature, and it ruins it. You want to leave it up to the imagination a bit. Like, that's what made this film, at least the look of the elves and the look of Krampus himself, so effective.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of effective, I think another great something that the director does to great effect is building actual, like, fun horror tension moments in this sort of fun scene. To this day, I will say that, like, probably one of the best scenes that he has directed is the initial time when the daughter goes out into the snow and we see Krampus-ish for the first time, where she's hiding underneath that car. And, she sees it, she starts to run, and then you see, like, this thing, like, leaping from rooftop to rooftop in the snow. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, what's in the shadows and stuff like that, and not fully showing everything. I loved the blizzard. I love the fact that it hit sub-zero and everything was freezing within minutes. I liked I think it was a DHL truck or whatever, and the guy's frozen in it completely.
Right.
Frozen all the way through. It was crazy supernatural fantasy horror elements that really just I was very taken aback when I saw that.
This movie feels like a complete throwback, like top to bottom. This is straight up a throwback to the B horror films of the 80s, like Gremlins and the like of that.
Well, it feels like, so I guess the best way to put it, there used to be, I you could call it like the family horror genre. It's almost like family friendly horror. Now it's not 100% family friendly, but I think it's modernized to be family friendly. When you know, it's like modern family friendly.
yeah.
Well, because you know, they definitely say fuck once in it, at least once. I think someone might say it under their breath a second time, but there's an intense amount of violence in it. Especially when David Koechner gets shot with a nail gun in his leg like 3 or 4 times, and you see the bite marks in his leg, and I mean the bite marks look really nasty. And just, you know, the kids getting taken away, and you're like, are they killing them? Like, what's happening? They're taking kids right away. Like, that's usually in a film like this, they won't go that far. But it still has that element of something like Gremlins, where, or even the Goonies, as you had briefly said earlier. It has those elements to it, and that's why I think it's a great film. And another thing, it feels like in the beginning, very Christmas Vacation.
Absolutely, and that is an amazing like a great credit to this like really comedically stacked cast.
Well,
like,
it's an amazing family dynamic. Amazing family dynamic.
Like, so we have Adam Scott as the dad, Toni Collette as the mom, David Koechner as basically like reprising what should have been his role in Christmas Family Vacation already.
He wasn't in any of the vacation. He's basically like
no, he wasn't. But he's essentially
he's playing like the uncle. He's playing like the Randy Quaid's character.
He's playing Randy Quaid's character if like he voted Trump. That's exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
What
he was playing. And then Alison Tolman was fantastic as his wife Linda.
So good.
Holy shit! Like, her character was great. And then Aunt Dorothy, she's awesome. Like, they're all terrible people. They're really and they really push it. They push the family levels. Like, where it's the brother that they or the relatives they can't stand, and it's just
right, yeah.
They really push that to the T, and especially with Howie Jr., who doesn't talk at all, and Jordan and Stevie, who it's like, yeah, your dad totally wishes you were boys. Like,
but also here's the kind of the interesting thing, because we see, like, you say that this movie may have been kneecapped by the fact that it was PG-13, and I kind of don't, because in a weird way, the charm that you kind of have to force onto a movie by making it PG-13 anchors this in a way that I don't think that, like, because that family dynamic would have gotten too dark if it were already.
Yeah.
I feel like they would have gotten too mean-spirited, and the movie would have gotten too, like, over the edge for this. But in for some way, there's, like, a slight tug of a leash to keep things kind of jovial for the audience. Like, there's always something that you want to, like, there's always something to laugh at. There's always something to be like, oh, well, yeah, that's just the crazy holiday family dynamic. Where there's just, like, some sort of, like, random fight with the kids that's, like, very, very angry. But, like, the parents are like, all right, let's break it up. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that a PG-13 helps this so much in that regard. Because I feel like, again, keeping that, like, there is something to be said about, like, the spirit of the holidays to, like, keep it a little cheerful, even though this is clearly very, very bleak. I don't know. It's still keeping that holiday fun with this movie that I think that an R rating might lose sight of.
Mm-hmm. Well, doing the PG-13 works basically because this is a darker version of a Christmas film, but like a Christmas family movie. You know, it's very, it's all about bringing people together and then putting them up against something that, you know, normally they come up against something, but this is like coming up against the anti Santa Claus, you know. And I think that's really what makes it stand out above that. Plus, you have Michael Dougherty directing it. If you had given this to anyone else and said make it PG-13, they would have distilled it down into something that would have been
mainly just jump scares and they wouldn't have had the creative juices to keep those ideas flowing for all of those fun creature encounters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, would not have been a good film if it had been directed by anyone else, I think.
Right. And it's never, ever, until maybe the very end, it's never bleak.
Every time you think it's going to go where they're going to rescue both of the kids, like they end up rescuing one of them. Who gets eaten. I think they rescue like Stevie, but they don't rescue Jordan. Like, she ends up getting eaten, and you think the mom, because she's like kicking everything's ass, she's gonna end up getting her daughter out of there, but she doesn't, and the daughter ends up getting sucked out through there, and you're like, oh, well, that was different. Didn't go the way I was expecting it to. And the movie seems to, as you're going through it, every time you're expecting something to happen, it kind of subverts your expectations and goes somewhere else. And that's a really great thing about this movie, is that it definitely is trying to do some twists and turns that normally you wouldn't see.
Yeah. No, and absolutely. And I think that kind of culminates in what essentially is the ending, where it takes a big risk, where everybody just kind of gets offed. Like, you don't, like,
very quickly,
very quickly, almost to the fact that, like, a too quick of a degree, where there clearly needs to be a resolution, like, end point almost, like, in the next 5 minutes, or we're not gonna be like, we gotta make this 90-minute runtime. And we kind of just, like, wait, and apparently we had just wasted time. So I like to think that this ending, while you might have had a bit of an issue with it, I think works very well.
Well, maybe. So when we get to the point where Adam Scott's character gets pulled in the snow and taken away, and then all of a sudden Alison Tolman's character gets pulled in the snow and taken away, and then within 2 seconds after that, Toni Collette's character gets taken away, I'm like, all right, we're getting to some big culmination thing. And then the kid confronts Krampus, and he, you know, I'm just like, oh, okay, he's going to unwish it all ever happened, and everything's going to go back to normal, and it's all going to be... And as I'm watching, then I'm just like, shit, is that what's going to happen? Is that what's going to happen? And then everything opens up into hell, and everyone starts getting thrown into this pit. And then the kid does, and you're like, oh, shit. And then he wakes up, though, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. You went with that ending? And then we get this little horror twist of everyone remembering that it all really did happen, and they all lived through this.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, and I think that, so again, I think the it was all a dream ending, very 80s, and quite a bit of a throwback, but like, if it had actually ended like that, total letdown.
Yeah, because you don't want it to all be a dream. There has to be some element to make it real. So the fact that everyone actually remembers it happening once Max ends up saying something to them, they get this look.
Yeah, I like that they don't even actually remember it. It's more of a, like, wait, we were just through, like, it was a bit more of like a kind of a Groundhog Day-y, like, third day realization, where we're like, wait a minute.
Well, we did get a montage of, like, different sound effects and music stuff and lines from earlier of people saying stuff. So they are remembering certain lines, which is great. And then it pulls out to reveal that they're actually trapped inside of a snow globe, potentially reliving this life this day forever and ever and ever. Now, there's two theories on this ending. One of them is, yes, they are in this Groundhog Day, going to live this out for eternity. And the other is that, you know, Max did confront Krampus, and that was something that his grandmother was never able to do. So instead of him just being the one left alone, he was able to get everyone back. But now Krampus is watching over him through this snow globe to make sure that if it ever happens again, he will be taking them forever, you know?
Now, that's, like, well, as lame as that ending is, none of that is explicitly said in what we are shown. Like, all we see is that it's, like, actually, like, they're just in a snow globe amongst a collection of snow globes.
Yeah, but, anything like that can almost be ambiguous, and you can always interpret it a certain way. I mean, we never fully find out afterwards. There's no 5 minutes later we find out that he walks outside, hits the side, and all of a sudden it's glass. Like, if that had happened, I would definitely say, holy shit, yeah, they're trapped in a snow globe forever. But leaving it a little open, you know, it kind of makes it how you want it to be.
It could represent a reality. It could represent, like, a type of, like, state, a metaphysical state that they are in. Yeah.
Right. And then having, you know, the all the toys kind of attack the camera at the end kind of makes you can interpret it any way you want to at that point.
Right. And I think that was more of a, like, that to me, the, like, the toys attacking the camera, that was more of the, again, fun 80s schlock of just like, right. Ah, we'll be back.
Yeah, it's kind of like, let's hit you with a jump scare right at the end. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Looney Tunes, that's all, folks, like, right. of the movie. Like, that's
well,
a...
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was in good fun, and it had nothing really to signify, like, a more concrete ending or to establish anything else, but I think it's more of a, this is the lesson the whole family was experiencing, and this is the, like, because again, we also have, oh my god, I didn't even mention the grandmother and her story, and the amazing stop motion that... out of nowhere comes to, like, have a plot dump of what the grandmother went through mm-hmm. with the Krampus. So we have the story of what the grandmother went through with the Krampus in a beautifully animated tale to know that, like, the Krampus wiped out an entire village whole village and left her as a reminder. So that's to say that, okay, assuming that the fate of that entire village and the family are the same.
I think it's more than just... So I think it's more than... This is where it slightly differs to me, because you see the snow globe with just the house, right? But when they go over to check on the daughter's boyfriend and stuff, something has already happened there. People have been attacked. More people are dead. Now, granted, he has other snow globes, but I don't think he has that entire neighborhood there. That's where I start thinking maybe he did reverse time in order to give this kid a second chance, mm-hmm. because he was actually ballsy enough to confront him.
See, but now, what I actually like about this is the fact that we are even debating the headcanon of what the Krampus has done to this fiction is a real testament to how, like, well-constructed this movie actually is.
Yeah.
For, like, a schlocky B-type Christmas horror film. I think it's something very special. I think at the very least you need to see this for its amazing design and its amazing technical prowess. You might laugh from time to time.
No, you're definitely gonna laugh. I mean, it's funny as hell. This movie is very, very funny. It is a comedy horror to a T. It's funny. The acting's good. The characters are great. The design of everything, character designs, creature designs, I mean, amazing. And then just the production design, with the way everything looks and the blizzard, it's so gorgeous. And you know what, there's something I didn't mention already, and I should have, that opening credit sequence that takes place at the mall, or like the department store.
Oh yeah.
That opening credit sequence of just everyone showing how everything's become so commercialized and,
like,
no one cares about the holiday spirit anymore. Well, and everyone,
like,
just
everybody fighting for gifts and all this stuff. It's
it was like 3 days before Christmas, because he was just doing that thing probably on, like, what, the 22nd or something.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So he gets into a fight and is beating the crap out of another kid, and everyone's just like. But then you're watching people in stores doing the exact same thing, showing that, like, everyone has lost the holiday spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fun opening scene, because then you're like, holy sh! Okay, this is what we're getting into.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderfully paced, wonderfully established film.
Yeah,
that I really, really would like to see more of, with these, like, sort of genre holiday stylized films you really do not see that often. It was even rare in the 80s.
Yeah, it was kind of rare in the 80s. I mean, I think Michael Dougherty made a film that, you know, it did pretty well at the box office. It definitely made, it was $15 million budget, and I think worldwide it made around 60. I think it was close to 45 in the US alone. So it shows that he's a director who can make a Christmas horror film and make it extremely profitable.
I mean, his previous film, Trick or Treat, was actually quite profitable as well. Like, he's somebody that can work on the cheap and then turn out some good success.
Trick or Treat was profitable, but Trick or Treat wasn't really profitable until it went on Blu-ray and DVD and digital download. Like, once it got word of mouth, I think it took a few years for it to finally pick up enough steam to really get the credit it deserved. And now is it only really... become a cult classic. I think one of the channels, FearNet, was showing it every year, I think, on Halloween, as like their film, and they would marathon it in the same way A Christmas Story is marathoned.
Oh God, that's amazing.
Well, and that's a testament to him as a filmmaker, and I feel that one day Krampus will be the horror version of A Christmas Story, where people will watch it as, and they'll marathon it in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this to me has become a holiday tradition of me wanting to watch the Krampus during the holidays, and I sincerely hope that you guys as well, because this is a like, you watch this on my recommendation. This is a wholehearted recommendation for me to see this movie. I absolutely loved it.
And I recommend it as well. I mean, I love Michael Dougherty. I think he's a great director, a great writer. And this definitely shows that he has a love of 80s films and those type of really fun, dark holiday movies. So, yeah, this gets a wholehearted recommendation for me as well. So, yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, definitely take a look at it. I mean, hell, man, Christmas is coming up, so watch it.
Absolutely. Enjoy it. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us here at Oh the Horror for this week. Again, have a happy holidays, guys. I really appreciate you guys taking the time I really appreciate you guys taking the time from your holidays to take us and have a listen. So thanks again, and we will see you guys next time. I've been Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes. And remember, we are on iTunes. We are on Google Play. You can find us on Libsyn. We are pretty much anywhere that you can get a podcast.
Absolutely. And be sure to check us out on Twitter and Facebook as well if you want to get in touch with us. And until next time, I'm Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
Thanks again, everybody.
Horror. Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Horror. Come, it is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Horror. When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.